could drag you from the ocean. I could pull you from the fire. And when you're standing in the shadows, I could open up the sky. And I could give you my devotion until the end of time. And you will never be forgotten with me by your side. And I don't need.
Chapter 26. Consequences. Kanan felt like he was frozen in place. Ezra's head was tucked underneath his chin, trembling so hard it felt like he would fall apart without Kanan's arms around him. His fingers were digging into Kanan's ribs so hard that Kanan knew he would be seeing purple marks tonight in the fresher. The Inquisitors had... Abruptly, a deep black anger welled up in his chest. Like the time he had thought Stance was dead on the third battle of Maegito, the dark side began to rise up, a deep black pool that threatened to drown him. This kid in his arms. Ezra. Kanan had only known him for a little over a month, and the idea, the image of what the Inquisitors had done to him, carving away at his sense of self and his self-esteem until he was this fragile creature in Kanan's arms, nearly see-through from the damage. Kanan had seen glimpses of the child Ezra must have been before. Sweet, caring, a little mischievous. Someone who laughed easily, who liked to talk to people and learn about them, who wanted to love and be loved. There were precious few traces of that kid now, in the boy slowly dampening the front of Kanan's shirt with his tears. The Grand Inquisitor. The Fifth Brother. The Seventh Sister. Kanan memorized their names, swearing to himself that if he ever met them... Revenge was not the Jedi way. But Kanan was no Jedi. Swallowing back his anger, Kanan spoke. Ezra. In his arms, Ezra stiffened and began to pull away. Ezra. The kid, his face red and damp-looking, was out of his lap now, kneeling across from him and radiating shame and self-hatred. He flinched at the sound of his name like it was a blow. He deserved a real physical blow, not just a verbal one, and soon Kanan would give him one like he deserved, like the stinking piece of slime that he was. Kanan stopped. He closed his eyes. And he pulled back from those sticky tendrils of thought that Ezra was radiating. The tendrils stilled their writhing as soon as he reached out to them. Frozen, like little baby animals confronted with a predator, keeping still and praying that they weren't noticed. It made Kanan sick. Minds weren't supposed to act like that. They were supposed to move, to dance like they had back at the temple before the war and everything went wrong. They weren't supposed to be still and silent, like a child wedged into a corner as their guardian raged, just waiting for those fists to be turned on their own tender flesh. The Grand Inquisitor. The Fifth Brother. The Seventh Sister. Kanan would never forgive them for this. But his anger wasn't what was important now. Ezra was. Ezra, he said softly again. Ezra let out a wet gasp, his fingers fretting the ends of his scarf.
Please don't call me that. He pleaded,
his voice broken.
Please, please don't call me that name.
He was trembling, his hands squeezing into white-knuckled fists. Kanan pressed his lips together, a wave of helplessness rising up in him. His arms felt cold where Ezra had just been curled up in them.
"That's your name, though," he said softly,
trying to cut through the cloying grief that was filling the phantom. He wanted to gather Ezra back up in his arms, wipe away the tears cutting paths down his cheeks.
"Stop,"
Ezra whimpered. His hands, still in trembling, white-knuckled fists, drifted up towards his face.
"Stop. I don't deserve it. Ezra killed Dev. Dev should have lived."
"No." Kanan leaned forward, suddenly on his knees and his fingertips brushing Ezra's shoulders. "No, Ezra." But Ezra was cradling his head in his hands, turning away.
"I should have died instead."
"No." Kanan knew he had spoken too loudly when Ezra's head jerked up and he shrank away, trying to turn and scuttle. But Kanan wouldn't let him. Grabbing his shoulders firmly, he pulled Ezra back into his lap, his back to Kanan's chest and arms scrabbling clumsily at his hands.
"No,"
Kanan whispered into Ezra's ear.
"No, Ezra, never say that. Never believe that. You don't deserve to die. It wasn't your fault."
Ezra was shaking like he was going to fly apart again.
"No, no,"
he said wetly, still clawing at Kanan's hands.
"I could have stopped it. I could have fought back."
"No, you couldn't have." The words left Kanan's mouth, and he knew that it was the truth down in his bones. Memories were rising up in his head, pressing against the back of his eyes and writhing, but all of his focus was on the boy in his arms. He could still feel those trembling tendrils, too frightened to pull back. Like little baby loth kittens found in their den without their mother. Pulling Ezra closer, he tucked the boy's head back under his chin and closed his eyes. Slowly, slowly, like the tide of an ocean coming in, Kanan cradled the tendrils in the Force. The cold, black self-loathing that coated them was strong, staining everything that they touched. But focusing, Kanan knew that the affection he felt for Ezra was stronger. He remembered an old Jedi saying that he'd heard in the temple before everything had gone wrong.
"A single candle can hold back the darkness."
And what he felt for Ezra was far brighter than a single candle.
"You couldn't have done anything," he said softly,
wrapping the dark-stained tendrils in his own light.
"The Inquisitors spent months breaking you down, making you feel powerless. They did that so you wouldn't be able to even think about fighting back."
"But I did think about it. I was just too much of a coward. I just watched."
Kanan squeezed Ezra closer, cutting off his words.
"His name was Stiles."
The words burst from his lips like a shrapnel grenade, the sharp, tearing detritus hanging in the air of the now silent phantom. They tasted of the blood that had spattered Caleb's face that day. Kanan breathed in a shaky breath and let it back out before continuing. Ezra was motionless in his arms when he opened his eyes, looking over his shoulder with wide, tear-filled eyes.
"His name was Stiles,"
Kanan said, taking a hand off of the kid's waist to gently press his head back underneath his chin.
"And he was my friend."
Ezra sniffled.
"I've heard that name before,"
he said quietly, his voice still wobbly. But the dark was receding from his thoughts, now that Kanan had given him something else to chew on.
I think Gray mentioned him when we were talking once. He was a captain or something."
Kanan ruthlessly pushed down the stab of pain at the mention of Gray.
"Yeah," he said. "He was a captain in my master's command. And we..."
He stopped and swallowed down the lump in his throat, the memory of Stiles on his back with a bloody halo around his head flashing in front of his eyes.
We were friends. And after everything that happened, after the massacre and the order having to leave Coruscant.
He had to stop and take another deep, ragged breath. He'd never told anyone else about this beside Hera.
Once we'd escaped from Coruscant, he tracked me down to where I was hiding in the cargo hold and shot himself in the head in front of me.
The words hung still in the air. Ezra was still in his arms. He was still. The whole shuttle was still, like the universe was between breaths.
Stiles was the one who distracted my master while she was trying to defend herself, Kanan continued, focusing on keeping his voice steady.
This wasn't about him, it was about Ezra and making him understand.
She was shot down while yelling for him to stop. Apparently that stuck with him.
Restlessly, he stroked a thumb along the soft fuzz of Ezra's buzzed head.
He felt that he had to make up for that. He tried protecting me, and he nearly beat Janus to death. He tried to visit me at the temple. He cleared the path for us to escape to the landing bay during the massacre. But it wasn't enough to make the guilt go away. And in the end...
Kanan closed his eyes, as the vision of Stiles kneeling in front of him, his blaster under his chin and his free hand caressing Caleb's cheek as tears spilled down his cheeks and he smiled down at the boy. Kanan opened his eyes again, his own tears prickling at the corners. In the end, he decided that the only way he could make up for things was in death. Ezra was still and silent in his arms.
I couldn't do anything, Kanan continued. He stared at the wall, knowing that if he looked down at Ezra, he wouldn't be able to finish the story. Everything that had happened, that I'd seen, it was like I was paralyzed. I knew what he was about to do, but...
He stopped as his voice cracked, clearing his throat.
What I'm trying to say is that I get it,
he continued, focusing on keeping his voice steady.
The Inquisitors, that was what they were trying to do to you. Paralyze that part of you that connects your thoughts to your actions. I've been there. I get it.
Ezra's shoulders began to tremble.
You couldn't have done anything,
Kanan mumbled, pressing his face against Ezra's scalp.
It's not your fault.
Small, broken whimpers began to emanate from Ezra. His arms wound back around Kanan, his fingers digging into his ribs again. Kanan didn't mind. He'd wear the marks left behind proudly.
It's not your fault,
Kanan whispered, beginning to rock them back and forth as Ezra began to keen, a fresh wave of tears soaking his front.
And I'll tell you that as many times as you need for you to believe it.
Kanan didn't know how long they sat there like that, keeping Ezra wrapped in light and chasing away the sticky darkness from his thoughts took up all of his focus. It was only once Ezra's sobs had quieted down to hiccups, the self-blame and self-hatred slowly dissolving into the Force, that Kanan let himself look up. The lights outside of the cockpit in Phoenix Nest's landing bay looked to be at half. They were in the sleep cycle then. Kanan wasn't surprised. The exhaustion that was settling into his bones would have been hint enough if they weren't in the shuttle. Looking back down at Ezra, Kanan saw the way his reddened eyes were half-hooded. He was radiating exhaustion as well, echoing how Kanan felt. It had been a very long day for the both of them. Hey. Kanan kept his voice low and soft. Feeling better? There was a long pause before Ezra answered. No. Kanan closed his eyes and nuzzled the top of Ezra's head again, squeezing him just a little bit closer. I'm sorry. It's not your fault, Ezra mumbled. His fingers were playing up and down the seam of Kanan's sweater absentmindedly. He didn't look up. I'm just hurt. Kanan cut him off before he could call himself names. Reaching out, he tried to send a little more of the affection he felt towards the kid pulsing through the light surrounding them. And healing isn't easy. Ezra scoffed weakly. I'll say, he muttered, showing a little of the spirit that Kanan was sure had been far more prominent with the old Ezra. I say too, Kanan joked gently, trying to encourage a little more of that spark. He preferred it to the fragile little boy he'd been cradling earlier. Anyways, it's late. Feel like bed, or do you need a little bit longer? From the way Ezra was collapsed against him, Kanan wasn't surprised to hear him answer. Bed. Stepping out from the Phantom, Kanan noticed that Hera and the rest of the crew seemed to have decided to mimic the landing bay outside. The lights lining the corridor had been dimmed, and Kanan could hear Zeb snoring through the door to his cabin. Squeezing Ezra's shoulder gently, he guided the kid away from the snores and towards his own cabin. Ezra's head was bobbing with exhaustion, his eyes fluttering. Once the door slid shut, he rubbed at an eye with the heel of his hand and looked around, frowning.
This isn't my room.
His voice wasn't cross, just confused. Looking up at Kanan, he blinked his big, blue, bloodshot eyes.
Isn't this your room?
Kanan rubbed his thumb along Ezra's shoulder soothingly.
Yeah, it is, he said softly. Didn't think we should disturb Zeb, that's all.
Ezra blinked a few more times.
Oh, that makes sense.
A tired smile tugged at Kanan's lips. Coming to stop in the middle of the room, he gently nudged Ezra to stay where he was, and then knelt down in front of his bed. Tugging open the drawers underneath the bunk, he pulled out an old soft shirt and a set of worn lounging pants, before standing back up and facing Ezra again.
Here, he said, pressing the clothes into Ezra's hands.
Ezra took them and stared down at them blankly. Silence stretched out between them. Kanan cleared his throat and gently laid his hands back over the clothes.
To where to bed? He prompted.
More silence. Then Ezra sucked in a breath and shook his head.
Bed. Right.
He stared down at his front.
Do you need some help?
Kanan asked after several heartbeats passed without more movement.
No, Ezra sounded a little defensive. My hands are just full.
Ah, Kanan recognized this now. He'd seen it back when he was... Well, it didn't matter. He'd been running with a rough crowd, keeping his distance, and the imps had suddenly come crashing down on them and anyone they'd known. After days spent awake, people got like this sometimes. All of their cleverness fleeing before exhaustion, until they couldn't even tie their own laces. Reaching out, he gently guided Ezra over to the bed and got him to sit down. Kneeling in front of him, Kanan picked up one of his feet and began to tug off the boot covering it. He could feel Ezra's distant befuddlement tickling up against him, and sent a soothing wave of calmness back out towards the kid. Once both boots were off and set to the side, Kanan unwound the scarf that seemed a permanent part of Ezra's outfit
and tugged down the zipper on the front of his flight suit to just above his belly button. Gently, he pulled the now loose suit down Ezra's shoulders until they were forced to stop at his elbows.
Kanan cocked an eyebrow.
Ezra was still holding the clothes, looking at him distantly with half-shut eyes.
"You can put down the clothes on the bed while you change," he prompted.
When Ezra made no move to put the clothes down, Kanan delicately took them from his limp hands and placed them on the bed beside him. Reaching into the flight suit, he began to tug up Ezra's undershirt. Kanan had done this a couple times before. On one planet, where he'd been working as a cook, his neighbor had been what was called in polite circles a lady of the night. In return for her getting him a job at the local diner, he'd help take care of her kids some nights, including helping them get changed for bed. And the way Ezra was acting right now reminded Kanan of the youngest, quiet and obedient, raising his arms to help. The kid in his memories, though, had looked nothing like what was revealed to him now. Kanan had been too angry about the tattoo on the back of Ezra's neck to pay attention to the examination the doctor had put him through a few nights before. But now. Now, in front of him, he saw what the Inquisitors had done to Ezra in stark, unsympathetic light. The little kids Kanan had taken care of had been chubby little things, with even the sport nut eldest having a healthy layer of fat. Ezra wasn't. His ribs pressed up against his skin like they were trying to escape. Kanan would have sworn that he could see the kid's heart beating through the stretched skin of his chest. His collarbones looked like they were going to slice through his skin at any moment. And the scars. The scars! Kanan swallowed and let go of his anger like he'd been taught so many years before. This wasn't about him. It was about Ezra and what he needed. And right now, he needed to sleep. The shirt off, Kanan tossed it on the top bunk and handed the sleep shirt back to Ezra. "Can you handle the rest?" he asked, looking carefully at the kid. Ezra, running his fingers along the soft, worn fabric of the shirt, made slightly unfocused eye contact before nodding.
"I can change my pants, yeah."
"Good." Gently, he patted Ezra's shoulder. The one that had looked like an animal had gnawed on it. "I'll be back in just a second. I'm just going to get you an extra blanket." Outside of the cabin, Kanan stopped for a moment just to breathe. His eyes fluttering closed, he let out a long, low sigh. His anger was bubbling below his skin, echoing against the despair and unsteadiness that he'd been feeling all day. But he couldn't let it out. Not now, not in front of Ezra. It would be too easy for him to think that it was directed towards him. Pulling a clean quilt from storage took a few minutes. Kanan had dithered between two, not wanting to get one that wouldn't keep Ezra warm, but at the same time knowing that the thickest they had was technically Sabine's. Finally, he firmly told himself that after what she had pulled, Sabine could deal with having a quilt she barely used given to the person she'd hurt for a night.
"Okay, Ezra," he said quietly as he re-entered the cabin. "I got you a quilt."
He stopped at the sight in front of him.
Ezra apparently hadn't been able to keep his eyes open for much longer after Kanan had left. He was lying down on the bunk, curled up into a small ball so tightly that it hurt to look at him. Kanan could see the small quivers of his skin as he shivered in his sleep from where he was standing. Kanan sighed softly and crossed the room, unfolding the quilt as he went. Kneeling down, he tucked the blanket in around Ezra. Underneath his hands, just how small the kid was abruptly hit him again. The thinness of the arms tucked in against his chest,
how sharp his cheekbones were. It made Kanan want to wrap him up and protect him from the galaxy forever. He wanted to see Ezra smile, see his cheeks fill out, and that empty look in his eyes that had existed as he told Kanan about Dev disappear. He wanted to teach him how to fly the Phantom, how to shoot a blaster. On an impulse, Kanan leaned down and pressed his forehead against Ezra's temple. The warmth that was filling his chest as he looked at the kid felt like a sun on a resort planet. Bright and soothing and relaxing. And Kanan knew that he was radiating this feeling into the Force, but he couldn't bring himself to care. Behind him, the door hissed open. Kanan couldn't bring himself to move. "How's he doing?" Hera asked, coming to kneel down beside him. Kanan could see out of the corner of his eye that she was in her sleep clothes, but her eyes were still bright with alertness. "They forced him to kill his friend as a graduation test." The words slipped out from Kanan's mouth before he could stop them, and with them came another surge of anger that he had to push down. "As a test of obedience." Hera was silent beside him. He could feel the tension in her, though. Sighing, he pulled his head away from Ezra's and looked at her.
"How's Sabine, then? She explained what was going on there?"
Hera sighed as well. Placing a green hand beside his on Ezra's side, she ran it up and down for a few seconds before answering. "She didn't explain. Just reminded us of Mandalore."
"Mandalore?"
All the pieces fit together at once, with a click that felt more like a crash. Kanan swore beneath his breath. "Of course." A memory was quick to swim up and make his stomach clench. "Damn it, she tried to talk to me."
"And to me." Hera covered his hand with hers. "She tried to talk to both of us, and we didn't listen. It's on both of us what happened."
"Still..." Ezra stirred underneath his hand, his brow furrowing. A low whimper came from his throat. Breathing deeply, Kanan released his anger into the Force again. This wasn't about him. "It's over, Kanan," Hera reminded him, giving his hand a squeeze. "It's in the past. All we can do now is keep looking to the future."
"Right."
Kanan's stomach refused to unwind, though.
"Right. It's done. Now how do we fix this, then?"
He and Hera had ended up talking long into the night, trying to figure out how to heal the rifts that Sabine's actions had shown were forming in their family before they got any wider. It had been hard, but eventually they had come to a decision that they thought would work.
Now all they had to do was put it into action.
Turning away from the stove, Kanan slid the last flat cake onto one of the waiting plates. The galley was unusually quiet this morning. Not that Kanan blamed anyone. It had been a very long day yesterday. But, he thought, as he looked at the awkward bunch sitting at the little table they had, he knew that the silence hanging over the room had nothing to do with exhaustion. It had far more to do with the two teenagers carefully avoiding each other's eyes as they sat across the table from each other. Hera picked up three of the plates he had deposited the flat cakes onto and caught his eye. Flicking her eyes over to the two teens, she raised an eyebrow at him, silently asking when they were going to start their talk with the kids. Rather than answering, Kanan picked up the other plates and headed towards the table. Setting down a plate in front of both of them, he then sat down beside Ezra, folding his hands in front of himself. After giving Zeb, who was awkwardly lurking by the doorway, his own plate, Hera mimicked Kanan and sat down beside Sabine. No one picked up their forks.
Kanan sighed. He'd kind of hoped that they'd be able to have something in their stomachs before having this conversation. Looked like that wasn't going to happen, though. All right, he muttered. Guess we'll do this now, then. Sabine shifted in her seat. Hera took a deep breath before starting. Sabine, what you did last night was not right, she began, just as they had discussed last night. Sabine's chin rounded out mutinously. But it wasn't entirely your fault, Kanan interjected. He didn't want her shutting down. They wanted to resolve this, not just hand out punishments. You did try to talk to us multiple times about your worries, and for a variety of reasons, we didn't listen. And that's on us, Hera said. Reaching over, she placed a hand over Sabine's. It was wrong. No matter how busy we were, we should have listened to your concerns. However, like we were saying, Kanan said, keeping his voice stern, how you ended up trying to resolve this was not appropriate. Sabine let out a huff of air through her nose. Turning her head, she looked Kanan square in the eyes. Well, how was I supposed to resolve it, then? She asked. You even admitted that you weren't listening. And like we just said, that was wrong of us. Kanan kept his face calm and still. No need to escalate this. But frustrated and scared or not, pulling a blaster on someone isn't the appropriate reaction. Did you even think of what could have happened if you were right? If Ezra was an Inquisitor? Sabine's jaw worked for a second, and Kanan knew that she hadn't. Hera sighed. Sabine, she said, we're worried for you. It's not like you to take such risks without first thinking them through. And we think that we know why that is. She paused for a moment before continuing. We're taking you off of decrypting the transmission. Sabine stiffened sharply, her eyes flashing. What? I'm nearly finished! I've already talked to Tano and Commander Sato, Hera said, her voice steely. They've agreed to finish up the work. Sabine, she sighed. That transmission has only been winding you up tighter and tighter, and making you isolate yourself in your room. That has to stop. Now. Sabine looked over to Kanan beseechingly. But Kanan agreed with Hera on this. Crossing his arms, he raised an eyebrow at her and tilted his head over to Hera. Sabine deflated. Pressing her palms together, she looked away from them all, staring at the table with furrowed brows and thinned lips. What am I going to be doing instead, then? Kanan took a deep breath. He did not expect this to go over well. You, he said sternly, are going to be escorting Ezra to and from his mind-healing sessions along with Zeb. Predictably, she exploded. What? Kanan raised a hand. Neither of you know each other at all, he said sternly. Sabine, you've been spending so much time with that transmission that we've barely seen you, let alone Ezra. Remember what I told you last night? Hera chimed in. Our words alone might not be enough to convince you, but if you spend some time with him... Look, I'm sorry about what I did, but there's no way, Sabine interrupted heatedly, starting to get up. No buts. Kanan cut off the rising argument with a sharp gesture. Your actions have consequences, Sabine. Silence fell over the room. Sabine sat back down abruptly, staring at the table and the flat cakes in front of her. Ezra was still beside Kanan, also staring down at the flat cakes. Kanan sighed and picked up his fork. Come on, he said, feeling very tired. Let's eat before these get cold. He speared part of the fluffy cakes on his fork and popped it into his mouth. Slowly, the others followed him. Hera ate hers calmly, like they hadn't just been arguing, while Zeb scarfed his own with his eyes bouncing between them and Sabine. And Sabine, she stabbed at the innocent food like it was a roundhead's face.
What if I don't want her to come, though?
The question was so soft, Kanan didn't catch it at first. Cocking his head to look at Ezra, he paused mid-chew.
What?
Ezra squirmed slightly in his seat, before squaring his shoulders.
What if I don't want her to come with me, though?
He said, a little louder. Hera put her fork down.
Ezra, this isn't meant to be a punishment for you, but Sabine needs to spend time with you so that she can stop seeing you as a threat.
Yeah, well, forgive me if I'm not comfortable having someone who thinks I'm a monster standing over me while I'm only half conscious.
He wouldn't look any of them in the eye.
Ezra, Kanan said, stilling Ezra's hands by laying his own on top of them.
Look at me.
Slowly, like he was being forced to, Ezra's head rose. Kanan was startled to see tears gleaming in the corners of his bright blue eyes. Reaching out through the force automatically, he flinched internally at the sticky feeling of darkness that was crawling all over Ezra's thoughts. It coiled around him, whispering suggestions of how Sabine was right, how Kanan and Hera and Zeb all felt the same and were just taking pity on him.
Ezra, Kanan said, putting a hand on Ezra's shoulder and pulling him close. You won't be alone with her. Zeb's going to be with you as well. And he knows you're not a monster. I know you're not a monster. Hera knows you're not a monster. And if you do this, Sabine won't think you're a monster for much longer either.
Out of the corner of his eye, Kanan saw Sabine look away sharply at that, her lips twisting. He didn't say anything, preferring to focus on wrapping his light around Ezra.
I'm sorry that we sprung this on you too, but it was the best solution that we could come up with on short notice that actually has a chance of solving this in the long term. And like I said, we're not leaving you alone with her. I promise you, there's always going to be another person with you two.
The dark in his thoughts was beginning to lessen. Kanan watched as Ezra bit his lower lip, winced, and then ran his tongue along it. Silently, he sent a little more affection towards the kid.
I guess I can live with that,
he mumbled after a few seconds. Slowly, he picked up his fork and began to dig into his breakfast. Kanan nodded. He'd take that. It had been a lot these past few days. He looked over at Sabine to check how she was taking his words. Sabine was just staring down at her plate, shredding her flat cakes with her fork. But the stubborn round of her chin had faded, and as he watched, she scooped up some of the flat cake flakes she'd made onto her fork and popped them into her mouth.
Kanan would take that, too.
This would work out, Kanan told himself as he turned back to his own breakfast. It wouldn't be okay overnight, not after everything that had happened. But eventually, it would be okay.